You're listening to the Mazingo Baseball Podcast. We're bringing in some of the best baseball minds you can find anywhere. I'm your host, Harold Mazingo. Before we get started, make sure you subscribe, give us a rating, share with your friends, do whatever you got to do so we can keep this train rolling. Now let's dive in. We're jumping right back in with part two from Joey Friedman. If you haven't checked out part one, go back and check that out first. But Joey's right in the middle of discussing developing youth catchers.
Yeah, so the first thing before I get into any of the skills of a catcher is, are you setting yourself up to be in a good position to perform the tasks, right? So I look at the setups. And the two things that I look at in a setup is, are you in a strong position? And can you move the glove freely? So in a strong position, are you really grounded and anchored into the ground? And a lot of times kids be like, oh, yeah. And there's one stance that I don't know where it's taught, but I see it more than anything before I work with a kid. And it's like you're on – it's almost like a position where you'd see a guy giving a sign to a pitcher where the guy's on the balls of his foot, his heel is completely off the ground. Which isn't balanced or grounded to me. So I was like, okay, so you're balanced, right? And he's like, yeah, yeah. So then I'll go and take my pinky and just like tap his shoulder and he'll fall backwards. I was like, that's not very balanced to me, is it? And then they start laughing. And then, you know, I like, whether it be your whole foot or you go, you know, I don't know if we want to really get into all knee downs and 2 feet and all that setups, but basically where you're anchored in, where I can move you around a little bit and you stay firm, right? And when there becomes runners on base, that changes. You need to be a little bit more explosive. But making sure they're in a good setup before anything. And then from there goes receiving and having the kid being able to control the ball. And there's certain tips and, you know, maybe thinking of staying below the ball, because if you come from above the ball, you're going to be pushing the ball down a lot. So being able to control the ball receiving, because if you can't do that, then the next two get affected, right? If you're doing stuff that hinder your receiving, it'll also actually affect how you block and throw too. Then when I go from blocking and throwing from there. But as far as drills, you know, once you get them into the good setup and just try to make it realistic as possible, throw balls at them. And then once they get comfortable with catching the ball, challenge them with blocking. Once they get comfortable with blocking, mix it up between in the air and in the dirt. So now they're incorporating decision-making. The more realistic you can make it, the better they're going to be for it when they get to the games.
All right, I'm going to ask you your opinion on something I did this past year with my guys. And if I'm off on this, you can tell me. I don't mind. I want to get better myself. So I started all of them not necessarily knowing, but worrying about if they were in a balanced position like you're talking about. I was mostly worried, do they want to catch? I had two people that even wanted to catch. Yeah. Hey, would you get back there and not be scared? That'd be great. But anyways, I started them learning to catch by getting them down in a stance and throwing tennis balls to them, just getting a feel for catching the tennis balls. Do you like that sort of thing, or would you prefer to start with the glove on with baseballs?
Yeah, no, I love that idea. Yeah. And anything, because you got it. So when I was first talking about the position, is there's certain ways we have to reprogram the brain, right? So like if you weren't expecting an hour to toss you a ball, first thing you would probably do is you'd take your hands and you go up to protect your face, and you'd probably take your head back too, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's just programmed in our brain that we need to protect ourselves. So a lot of catching is rewiring our brain to be like, hey, it's okay, we got gear on, it's okay to block, it's okay to look at the ball when it's foul tipped. Every single catcher is going to flinch when they block. Almost every single one. In my mind, I really can't think of any that the first time I worked with them blocking, they were good to go. Even high schoolers, even 14, 15, 16 year olds. And some of them even been catching for years, but they just didn't work on blocking much. When you were first working on some of these skills, you're going to flinch, you're going to get scared. And you're talking about the younger kids. Yeah, they might be scared to catch the ball. And think about when they're just learning to play catch, right? They turn the glove over and they get their head away from it. They're trying to protect themselves. Yeah. It's just something in, programmed in, within us. So the more reps they get and they develop a trust, hey, I'm okay.
Yep.
You know, they get rid of that anxiousness. They get rid of the nervousness. Hey, I'm okay. So if a tennis ball does that, yeah, do that.
Yep.
For sure. I mean, that's a great way to do it. Or a soft, squishy ball or whatever. If you're putting it through a machine, you got a lot of different machines and balls that you can put through them that maybe take that fear away. But if you make it, you know, if you try to be the tough guy, like, oh, well, they'll get over it. No, what they're going to get over is baseball. They're going to stop playing because they don't want to do it
anymore. Yeah, so I got to share kind of a funny story on that line. So we had spent, I guess, about 3 weeks or so before the season practicing for our Little League season. And on the last week, I let pitchers throw. So I spent the first, I don't know, five practices working with the catchers on – trying to get over that fear that you're talking about, right? Just getting them used to being in that position, catching the balls. We went through some various stuff with tennis balls. We did some stuff with some weighted balls as well for just them squeezing it. Then we started incorporating baseballs in, letting them catch that, right? And the one kid that we had was starting to get pretty comfortable with that, but we had to throw a bullpen. So right before the season started, I had the pitchers throw. And he was catching everybody, and he was doing okay. I mean, that was, you know, about what you expect. But then we had one decent pitcher, and he threw the first pitch, and the kid called me over there, and I said, hey, what's going on? He said, Coach, I don't want to do this anymore. He was like, he throws too hard. And I was just like, oh, you'll be all right. Just get back there. It'll get better, I promise. I was like, you're doing a great job. You're catching the ball. Like, you're going to be – I know it's a little bit, you know, scary because he's throwing hard. But you're catching it. You're fine. You got all the gear on. Like, we're gonna be just fine. Yeah, and definitely if he was like seriously in a position to get hurt, I would have thought differently. But he was doing great. He just got scared. This dude was throwing so hard that if he missed one, he was gonna get hurt.
So you stuck back there and ended up being okay?
Yeah, he caught all year for me.
Awesome. Yeah. So, but you know. That's what I'm talking about. You have a great coach that's encouraging them through that. That when they might doubt themselves, you push them through it with being safe with them, and now they're okay, right? Now it's probably nothing to them to catch that kid or somebody even more challenging than him.
Yeah,
so that's awesome.
So I brought I got to share another funny story. I probably shouldn't do this on this podcast, but it's too funny not to share. So I brought in a former coach of mine who happened to catch at VCU several years before I was there. But anyways, he was working with my catchers, and I said, all right, who wants to catch? And I had three kids raise their hands. So I said, all right, y'all are going with this coach. He's going to work on you with catching. One of the kids, oh, man, I feel bad telling this story. But anyways, he wasn't quite there, but he wanted to try catching. So I said, yeah, go over there and do the drills. No problem. He went over there, and this coach threw him one ball, and he said, nah, son, you can't catch. You got to find you another position. He said, hey, take him back. But it was just one of those things. He knew, like, this kid's going to get seriously hurt. Like, yeah. We can't put him away. Maybe he said, go home and practice. Maybe try it again next year. But this year, you got to play a different position.
Yeah.
Oh, man. But anyway. Yeah,
it's definitely a position where, you know, and I've had to have some tough conversations with the 9-year-old and the 10-year-old parents, where there may have been interest, you know, in coach pitch. That's the beauty of coach pitch, is you can control a lot more, right? So you can control the speed and the of what you're throwing to the hitter, but also to the catcher too. you can manage it. It's just a little bit more manageable, right? Not that you're going to change how you're throwing to a catcher. You're really going towards a hitter, but a lot of times you're not blowing by fastballs to the hitter because you want them to be able to hit it, right? So it's going to be manageable for the catcher. So you're pretty safe putting a lot of the guys back there in coach pitch. But once it goes to kid pitch, you got to be careful who you put back there because it becomes a safety concern. And you got to be able to, okay, is this challenging him and he's going to be okay, or is this is going to get him hurt? Because some kids throw too hard for somebody to be able to catch. And then I've had to tell a parent, hey, look, he's not there yet. I know he wants to catch, and that's awesome that he wants to catch, but he's not there yet. We're going to try to get him there, but he's not there at this point in time. And then you also got to keep in mind of the whole team too. If they're going back to the backstop every single pitch and they're catchable balls, that drags the game on, and that takes away the fun of everybody else too. So that, you know, it's unfortunate, but you got to keep that in mind also. And you just, as long as you're working with that guy on the side and trying to build him up to get to that spot that he wants to be at, I think you're doing the best thing you can for the kid.
Yep, absolutely. All right, Joe, before we wrap up, we got to talk about one more thing. So you have a series of camps that you do every year. I hope I don't mess up any part of this, but it's the Karen Friedman Memorial Baseball Camp. So if you could talk us through what that is and how to find more information, that would be great.
Yeah, so it's something I started at this point 10 years ago. My mom, name was Karen Friedman. She passed away in 1992 when I was 4 years old of breast cancer. She was a teacher at King George Elementary School. When she passed, my family decided to take the money that was donated in her memory and create a scholarship in her name. And the goal was to have a scholarship for every single class until her last class graduated. Well, for whatever reason, the money, there's still money in the account. I don't know if somebody was secretly putting money in there or what, but we always seemed to have money. So we kept giving out the scholarship until 2010, it finally ran out. And that kind of just, hurt a little bit because it's just another way of bringing up her memory and honoring her and doing what really she had a passion for was impacting kids' lives for the better. And so I was like, I got to do something. And unfortunately, with life being so busy, you can always have a desire to want to do something and then you just never put forth the action. Well, my grandma in 2013, which is also the same year I stopped playing professionally, she ended up unfortunately passing from breast cancer also. And I was talking to my dad and I said, hey, like, I just remember seeing her because this is now I'm an adult and seeing somebody going through cancer and seeing the pain that she was going through, just trying to hang in there. And I asked my dad, I said, that's not like mom wasn't like this. And he's like, no, your mom had it worse. We had to bring in a coach to coach her how to breathe. And I was like, all right, well, like I got to do something. So, you know, like I had mentioned before, I was fortunate to be around all these great coaches through this hitting camp that I had helped out every year. And I got the coaches to say, hey guys, this is what I want to do. And everybody was all on board. And we put the camp together and me just being very optimistic. I was like, oh, we'll raise 10 grand. We'll get $200, 200 kids in the first time. And we got 50 kids in for one session. And, but it was good. It was manageable and the kids had a blast. And we raised, I think that first year, maybe like $2,000, which was a good scholarship to be able to give out. So I used the money to fund the scholarship. I was able to bring back the scholarship. And then the other half I donated to, at the time, the Breast Cancer Research Foundation. And I researched all these different cancer organizations, and because I really wanted to make sure the money was going to an organization that put a lot of the money towards research or awareness or what have you. And they were A-plus rated by Charity Rating. I believe it's called charityrating.com. And I think 88% went towards research, 3% went towards awareness, and then like 8 or 9% went towards admin, which, you know, you need to pay people to have this stuff operate. So that is necessary, but it was a good ratio. It was a good percentage to me. And then years went by and we were like, you know what? Research is great, but if you really want to make an impact on all this, you want to get cancer before or in the early stages, right? Like it's great to be able to help people out once they've diagnosed and all that. But if we can encourage people to get it early, that's even better. So I did a bunch of research on like, okay, well, how can I donate to mammograms? And I actually learned a lot in that there's a lot of resources out there for you to be able to get a mammogram for free. Even if you don't have insurance, like here in Virginia, we have a program called Every Woman's Life, and it's funded by the state. And they offer cancer and cervical and breast cancer screenings to people that do not have insurance and have low income. So even if you don't have insurance, you can still get your screenings. So don't let that be a factor in you not being checked. But it was funny. I was like, well, I want to donate money, but it's like, okay, well, the state's paying for this, right? Insurance. I'm not helping out insurance companies. They get paid enough. I don't need to help out the state. They get the tax money. So how can I help out with mammograms? And I came across this study that the UVA, it's a clinical trial the UVA is doing, called a contrast enhanced mammography. And it's a mammogram machine that uses contrast. So it uses high light images and low light images, and it uses the contrast between the two. And if you look at a typical mammogram, you can see that at some points there can be a lot of just a lot of noise, is the best way I can use, and that can distract from a real troublesome area. This contrast enhanced mammogram image clears a lot of that out, and you can really see the troublesome spot a lot better. And we have signs at our camp that kind of show the two. But this machine's awesome. They're and it's less invasive. A lot of times, like if a woman has dense breasts, they have to get an MRI to get screened. Like a mammogram isn't enough. Where this, they no longer would have to get an MRI. They could just go into this machine. They use this mammogram machine. It's like a typical mammogram, and get the same quality of results. This machine also is, they're trying to make that they're able to do biopsies on the spot, and they're trying to be able to make it be portable. So you can, every time you see those mobile mammogram events, they're trying to be able to have this machine do that. So it's a really cool thing they're doing. What they're trying to do is not to see if it works. It's more of to prove to insurance companies that it's going to save you guys money to back this, which is unfortunate, but that's what you got to do with insurance companies. Is their business, they want to know that it's going to save them money. So that's what they're doing with this clinical trial, is proving to them that, hey, this is going to save your money. You need to pay for this for people. So we've been doing that. This will be our second year donating to them, but that's where our money goes. Half of it goes to the scholarship, and half of it now goes to this clinical trial. In 10 camps, we've raised over $120,000. We'll typically get last year was the first time I had to cap registration, just because we run out of real estate. We do the camp at Sunshine Park here in Fredericksburg. It's a beautiful facility. Doris Buffett and Cal Ripken Jr. and the Cal Ripken Senior Foundation had a lot to bring this to our area. It's two turf fields. And one of the, there's, from my understanding, there's two big pieces of why they wanted to bring this to Fredericksburg. Is one, the Challenger Division of Little League You know, as you being on a board, probably know, you know, that you're dealing with some kids with wheelchairs. Well, if it rains, they're out of commission for a couple of days, right? Or on these beautiful turf fields, it can rain and they're good to go in 10 minutes. So that was one reason to bring these fields. And then also it's in a, it's an area of Fredericksburg that, some of the kids around the area, they might not get a meal all day, and it might be challenging for them to afford baseball. So they wanted to have baseball around that area so they could play baseball. And even if the kid isn't in there, they have a leagues there. If the concession stand's going, they give the kid a hot dog for free, and it might be their only meal all day. So they do a lot of good things, and they let us have our camp there. And we do it once a year. We do it the Sunday closest to March 21st. This year it's going to be we haven't advertised it too much, but we're going to this year the camp's going to be March 24th, and then we're going to start opening up registration pretty soon. But yeah, what I'll do is I get a lot of those same coaches that have helped me out every year. So a lot of the local high school coaches, some guys that played professionally in the past, a lot of the local high school players will come and volunteer, because the camp is designed for 7 to 12 year olds. So they're actually the rock stars. Like I tell them, I said, I know you might feel a little awkward coaching because you're not used to it. You might feel a little shy. I can tell you right now, if you just tell that kid, hey, those are nice cleats, they're going to, that's going to be the highlight of their camp, because you are the coolest thing at this camp. So I'll typically get probably 40 high school kids helping me out, 20 high school coaches helping out. And again, some coaches that played locally, played professional baseball back, you know, years ago will help out also. But it's just an awesome, fun day. We're able to raise money to, what I feel are great causes. We're also able to educate. We try to, you know, we're not shy about it. You know, it might be overstepping lines or what have you. I don't care. Like, you need to get tested. You need to get tested. You need to get early. You need to make time. Like, you know, all so many women, they put everything first, their kids, their family, everything comes first. That's something you got to put first. Get tested, find it early, and get it taken care of, because that's the best way to beat that disease. So we have a lot of educational yard signs throughout the camp to help people maybe find a resource that they didn't know existed to help them, you know, hopefully they don't need to, but beat the disease if they need to. So yeah. Right. we have Facebook. Yeah. Facebook.com/ baseball for a cure. We have Instagram. Our handle is KF baseball for a cure, all spelled out. And then our website is KFBaseballForACure.com.
So perfect. I was getting ready to ask you where they could find everything, but that's awesome. This is incredible stuff you're doing, Joey. Just absolutely incredible and fascinating story you shared with us. I appreciate that, and appreciate all the work you're doing with that stuff. Hopefully some more people can get involved with that to help you out as much as possible with that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's another thing that makes it fun about the day is a lot of people have been affected by this disease. So, you know, I've had kids that I've coached that have helped out, and their mom may have recently passed from it. So it's like another day to honor their mom, even though my mom's name's on the shirt, it's a way for them to honor their mother also, and to fight against this terrible disease. And, you know, there's just been so many, just in the baseball world, so many great people and companies that have donated to our event. You know, every year I go out to the ABCA, and I hate doing this, but I go to the booths and ask if they want to contribute in any way. And a lot of times they'll donate product, and one company, Mind Baseball, on the spot, donated $1,000, four bats, four shirts. And I'm just like, wow, I can't believe so much kindness just for having a conversation. Yep. And that company was just starting out, and they're like, boom, here you go. I love what you're doing. But there's just so much good in this baseball world. And if anybody wants to get involved, I'm all for it. Try to beat this disease together.
I will do what I can to spread the word out here at our local little league. Try to get some more kids your way this year. And if you're looking for another coach at all, I'll do whatever I can to be there.
Always love having you in anything that I do.
Yep. Well, all right. Well, perfect, Joey. This has been awesome. We appreciate you coming on.
I appreciate you having me here. This was a lot of fun.
Yep.
Thanks for listening to the Mazingo Baseball Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the channel so you can get notified when the latest episodes are coming out. Share it with all your friends. Leave us a review. Be sure to check me out on all the social media accounts. It's going to be @MazingoBaseball. And check out the website, MazingoBaseball.com.